Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and it is my pleasure to welcome you here today on behalf of University College of Syracuse University. And I'm glad to see, many guests and old faces, new guests and old guests are in the room. So welcome today. You all know the routine. I think that once our speaker is finished, we will have questions. Anybody, guests included, welcome to ask a question. Just raise your hand and I will try to spot you, but we will end promptly after an hour. I want to remind you that next week we're going to be speaking with retired Colonel Ann Wright. She resigned her commission in 2003, right before the invasion of Iraq. She has been a peace advocate and a protester at the air park here, and she'll talk about her activities, and I hope you will be here. And so you might want to read up on some of the information about what's been going on with the 174th, and also Colonel Ann Wright. She's also written books, and one of her books will be here available for purchase, although there's certainly no obligation. I also wanted to point out to you, you all should have received an email, and if you didn't, you will get in the mail a flyer about this really exciting series that the Onondaga Citizens League is sponsoring on urban design and city image. This is a follow-up to our community image study, which will be released soon. Study committee members Christine Capella-Peters and George Curry very kindly offered to put this together. Dennis Connors of the OHA is also participating, and it's really enlightening. It's really for anybody with any level of knowledge about urban design, but interest in it. And so if you know a little bit and you want to know more, you don't know anything, you want to know something, this is for you. So just, I have some flyers, and it's also on the OnondagaCitizensLeague.org website. So today it's my pleasure to introduce today's guest speaker, Christina Reale. She's the Commissioner of Aviation for the City of Syracuse. She was appointed in May. It's been a little over a year now, right? Just a little over a year since she's been in that, although she's been with the department for some time. So she's responsible for the day-to-day management and oversight of the airport facility, and she'll tell us about all of that. She'll be telling us about the terminal improvement project, and also about the Syracuse Regional Airport Authority. And we also have Bill Fisher, Deputy County Executive and Chair of that relatively new authority, who will also be speaking to us today. So please join me first in welcoming Christina Reale.
Good morning. Thank you, Sandra, for that very nice introduction. Prior to becoming Commissioner of Aviation, I was the Public Information Officer for several years, and I always say the difference between the two positions is, as PIO, I only had to sound like I knew what I was talking about, but now I really need to know what I'm talking about. But it's been just an amazing career. I've been with the department for almost 15 years. I've seen many things happen over those years, and I love the airport. You know, I started this in 1997. My daughter was had just turned a year old, and I've seen both grow, and just have enjoyed working there, working with the staff, the tenants, and it's an amazing place. It's a huge, important piece and part of our community. Without an airport, what would we do? Where would we be? And it employs hundreds and hundreds of people. We have numerous tenants who rely on the airport for their day-to-day business. All of you sitting here in this room rely on the airport for either your business or your travel needs. So I think it's a great place, and I hope that I can share with you some of the things that we're focusing on currently, and at the end, we'll have some time to answer some questions. So let me get started. I always like to start with an aerial of the airport. This is the terminal building and the ramp area, but the airport is situated on over 2,000 acres. We are surrounded by the towns of DeWitt, Salina, Cicero, the ESM School District, and the North Syracuse School District. These are our runways, runway 1028, runway 1533. And when you look at this, you know, sometimes I think people forget or don't realize how big the airport is. It's situated ideally at the crossroads of upstate New York, which makes it easily accessible for people coming to the airport, leaving the airport, finding their way around. So I just like to, as I said, start off with this aerial shot of the airport. Today, the things that we're going to focus on that I'd like to talk about a little bit, give you an update on the passenger terminal security and access improvements project, which I like to call the security checkpoint project. It's much easier. I'd like to give you an overview of the air service market and our current air service efforts. And then I'm going to turn it over to Bill Fisher, who will give you an update on the Syracuse Regional Airport Authority. So the Syracuse, the Terminal Security and Access Improvement Project. The origin of the project, September 11, 2001, changed the way security would be handled at the airport. New security regulations and procedures, including the establishment of the TSA, necessitated that we look at how we screen passengers and baggage. What we did was initiated a study to determine what we could do to improve that process given the advent of new types of equipment and additional personnel and new screening protocol. We hired CNS engineers to develop this study, and at the end of the study, we were given three options to change the configuration either of the existing checkpoints or to look at constructing a new checkpoint. In June of 2008, the schematic design report was completed. We looked at these three design concepts and met with all of the stakeholders in the terminal. It was very important to us that the airlines, that the TSA, those who use and access the airport, the terminal building, every single day, supported our decision and the option that we were going to choose. The first concept, which entailed expanding the existing checkpoints, it was too limited and it wouldn't allow us to grow as TSA would continue and will continue to change screening protocol to come up with new types of screening equipment, and we didn't want to limit ourselves to the existing checkpoints. Concept three, which included a central checkpoint but with the addition of a crossover bridge in that center area, was just too expensive, and we didn't feel that we needed to add that center walkway to the parking garage. Our airport is very easy to navigate. It's big but not so big that you can't go from one terminal to the other, and we just didn't feel that we could justify that additional cost. So we chose concept two, which is what we started last September. Essentially, what the project entailed was demolishing the entire center lobby, that area that was the Discover the Airport exhibit, to demolish that, rebuild it with the addition of a second story that would house the new checkpoint and connecting bridges to the north and south concourses. What we would then do is consolidate passenger and baggage screening to one checkpoint. Everyone would then come through that central checkpoint, whereas now we are essentially splitting the passengers between two checkpoints. This is a rendering of what the new lobby will look like upon completion of the project. One of my favorite parts is the addition of this information center, which we believe and still believe is very important. We want people to have access to information when they come into the terminal. We want to offer that to the community when the CVB is hosting different events in the area, or when colleges are hosting different events in the area. They can send volunteers to this space, which is in the main lobby, and assist their, the people as they're coming into the terminal building. This is a rendering of the new checkpoint in the queuing area. So as you come up the stairs or the escalator or the elevator to the second floor, you will get in this queuing line here, and the new screening checkpoint is in the back here. this will have brand new, it's a brand new facility. Let me just go to the, and once you cross through the checkpoint, this is now the secure area of the terminal building. This glass curtain wall will overlook the ramp area, and this space will really, it'll be ours to do what we want with. When we talk about bringing in new concessions, when we talk about changing the way we advertise in the terminal building, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make changes that will benefit the passengers and, you know, allow us to do some things that we currently can't do, including developing the concession program. Talking a little bit about the project financials, the $60 million design and construction project paid for 100% by passenger facility charges. That's a $4.50 fee that is added to the price of your airfare every time you purchase a ticket. No tax dollars are being used to fund this project. We were also we also received $6 million from the TSA to pay for the modified inline checked baggage screening system, which essentially will take TSA and the equipment that's currently located in front of the ticket counter will be relocated to behind the ticket counter to open up the circulation space in the terminal. Some of the project highlights, affordable, okay, $60 million, fully funded in 15 years through the PFCs. It's sustainable. This is a LEED project. The project envelope is LEED. It includes replacing 1960s mechanical systems, new lighting. It's going to reduce the O&M cost by $1 per square foot, which makes our tenants very happy. And, you know, this is a security project. Yes, we are going to see many amenities, and we're going to be able to do a lot of things, but what is driving this project is security, to enhance terminal security and access through a single security checkpoint. It's a big boost for the local economy. A lot of jobs are because of the construction, we are seeing 60 to 80 to 100 people on site every day. As I said, you know, the jobs that are resulting because of this project are very important. The general contractor, local company, Huber Brewer, the subcontractors, again, local companies, O'Connell Electric and Burns Brothers. A little bit on the sustainability components. As I mentioned, this is registered to be among the first LEED certified airport projects in the state. Our goal is LEED Silver, and that includes energy efficient systems, construction techniques that minimize waste and encourage recycling, use of natural daylighting. One of the neat things is the rainwater harvesting system, the rainwater collection system, which part of it will be visible in the new Discover the Airport exhibit. So that's an exciting part of this project. And as I mentioned, it should reduce the entire terminal O&M cost by as much as $1 per square foot per year. Timeline, we are almost 7 months into the project, started in September of last year. 11 phases, however, several of the phases are going to take place at the same time. So currently you'll see work being done both in the center lobby and in Terminal B, and throughout the project, our goal is to minimize the impact to airport operations and to the passengers and employees at the airport. Now, an air service update, which is always of interest to folks. Here is a snapshot of our current air service schedule, and I'd like to show this because I think we have very good service. We have several airlines that have direct service to a variety of markets that can get you to virtually anywhere in the world that you need to go. Toronto, Chicago, Newark, Cleveland, Delta, which will begin service to LaGuardia in March. Oops. This is a new addition. They have taken over from U.S. Airways. There was a slot swap where they exchanged slots in LaGuardia for slots at in Washington, D.C., and as a result, we're going to see an increase in the LaGuardia service, anywhere from 100 to 150 additional seats every day to LaGuardia. We have direct service to JFK, Orlando, the Washington, D.C. airports, Chicago, Charlotte, Philadelphia, Boston. So I think we have a lot of good service. That doesn't mean that we don't need more service. We need additional capacity. We need competition to several markets. I think Atlanta is has always been a market that we want to see fares be a little more competitive than what they are right now. But when you look at our current service, I think we can get people where they need to go relatively easy and most of the time relatively inexpensively. When you compare, when you look at, here's what I challenge you to do. Look at our neighboring airport, Rochester, and those markets that we serve, that where we have the exact same service, the fares are competitive. I can't argue or I can't defend Atlanta. That's the only, Delta is the only carrier that we have that currently flies to Atlanta. In Rochester, there are two carriers that fly to Atlanta. So I recognize the fact that we need to do a little bit more on the Atlanta market. But the rest, I think it's very competitive. And this is, again, just a route map to show you our direct markets. When we meet with carriers, when we're talking to airlines about adding service, either additional capacity to current markets or new service, you know, we're constantly pushing more service to the west. We recognize that not only for the direct destination, but connecting service, it's very important to have more service to the west. When we meet with the airlines, we want to stress a couple of things. And I think one of the most important things is that the Syracuse catchment area has 3.5 million residents. And what the catchment area is when you look at a map of upstate New York, our catchment area is the geographic area where all other things being equal, people in that region will drive to Syracuse for their air service needs. Again, because of our location at the crossroads of two major highways, it's easy to get to our airport. I think that's important to many people. Syracuse, Central New York, the strongest economy in upstate New York. We work very closely with Center State CEO when we're meeting with the airlines because it's important to us that the airlines understand the business community, what the needs are, and no one can represent that better than Center State CEO. Low-cost carrier service at Syracuse is very limited. New service opportunities are available. We currently have one low-cost carrier, JetBlue. As the airlines continue to merge, you have these acquisitions and mergers and bankruptcies, there are fewer and fewer carriers out there, and what really has emerged as a result of all of these bankruptcies is the low-cost carrier, the ultra-low-cost carrier, like Spirit, Allegiant, Direct Air. Syracuse has facilities immediately available at reasonable cost. It's a turnkey operation. Hang up your sign, plug in your computers, and you can start operating right away. Syracuse and Central New York community will aggressively partner with airlines to maximize success. We have an incentive program which offers airlines credits towards their operating costs at the airport. In 2010, Congressman Maffei was very successful in helping us receive a grant from the U.S. DOT in the amount of $500,000 to help support air service. So we can package this all up together and provide the airlines with an incentive program that will help offset some of their startup costs and ensure their success in Syracuse. And I talked a little bit about the catchment area, and I don't know if you can really see on this slide, but here is the Syracuse catchment area, and you can see why and how large it actually is. People who live in Ottawa and Kingston and Cornwall drive to Syracuse for their air service. And when you look at our neighboring airports, theirs are smaller. Now, I don't like to compare Syracuse to Buffalo because we're not in the same category. I'd like to compare us to Rochester and Albany. And when you look at these three airports, our catchment area is certainly the largest. Again, 3.4, 3.5 million, the number two in upstate New York. And what's very interesting now, I don't know if you can tell, Buffalo has seen huge successes, a lot of it southwest, but also a lot of it in part due to the Canadian passengers that cross over and fly out of Buffalo. Their population, this represents the Canadian population in the Buffalo area. You'll see that Syracuse has the second largest Canadian population of the four major upstate New York airports and the largest upstate New York population. In Albany and Rochester, they're not seeing any of the benefits of the Canadian traveler. So, you know, that's one of the points that we like to make to the airlines, that we have access to the second largest Canadian population in upstate New York. Another key thing that we like to point out is Fort Drum. Syracuse is Fort Drum's primary airport. We have soldiers coming in and out every single day. So many that several years ago, a group of volunteers got together and started the Military Courtesy Room, which offers a place for soldiers, active military, to get some rest, have something to eat, relax, either while they're waiting for a flight or waiting for transportation to Fort Drum. They recognize the need, and as a result, the Military Courtesy Room was established. Syracuse lacks nonstop service to major markets in Florida and in the western U.S. Again, this is what the message that we give to the airlines. The red, and it's hard even for me to see from here, represents the markets that we currently don't have service. And when we're meeting with the airlines, these are the markets that we're pushing. Florida is a huge destination for many people, for the snowbirds, and we're always looking for more service to Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, St. Petersburg. But Baltimore, BWI, is a huge market. As a matter of fact, it's the largest unserved market out of Syracuse. So when we're talking to the airlines, it's one of the markets that we're very interested in. And, you know, we look at some of the long-haul markets, Denver, Phoenix, and it'd be great to have service to every single market that we want, but we have to be realistic in our planning, and I think it's important to have as much direct service as possible, but I think it's also more important to have competition among those markets, which will then allow you to get to the other destinations more cost-effectively. An interesting little fact or tidbit. So U.S. Airways has been the predominant carrier in Syracuse for many, many, many years. We think that's about to change with Delta's replacement of the LaGuardia service and their desire to continue to grow in upstate New York. I think we're going to see Delta become the predominant carrier. They are very supportive of Syracuse. They want to be successful here. They want to continue to grow. And as we continue to have conversations with them, I think we'll be successful in getting, if not new service, certainly additional capacity to their existing service. But it's a pretty good balance. U.S. Airways 29%, JetBlue B6 18%. You know, they've done so well here with two markets. It's amazing how much they've grown over the years. Delta again, and then United and Continental recently merged. They have about 25% of the passenger traffic here, and then American Airlines, which currently serves Chicago. Our priorities with the existing carriers. So when we're talking to Delta, JetBlue, U.S. Airways, you know, we have specific markets that we're interested in. Delta, with the slot swap with U.S. Airways, the LaGuardia service is going to become very important to them. We want them to continue to look at that as not only a direct market, but the way they've scheduled the flights, it's very convenient for their connecting service. And we want, we are hopeful that they will continue to grow that market here. Atlanta, more capacity, better pricing. They've worked with us. I think they've done a decent job at reducing the fares, but they will tell you that the planes are full, so people are flying, and they hear our concerns. They work with us, and they will continue to work with us on the Atlanta market. Detroit, more capacity. People going west. We certainly need more capacity with American Airlines' recent bankruptcy filing. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen there, and Chicago is a very important market for connecting service to the West, so we want them to look at adding more capacity through Detroit. We've talked to them about bringing back the Minneapolis-St. Paul service, which was very successful when Northwest served it prior to being acquired by Delta. They agree. They are currently looking at it, and we continue to talk about the Minneapolis-St. Paul service. JetBlue, our low-cost carrier, currently serving JFK and Orlando. We have talked to them about Boston, restoring Fort Lauderdale, and possible seasonal service to the Caribbean. U.S. Airways, you know, it's important to us that they certainly maintain the Washington capacity, but more important that they increase it, and we will be meeting with them actually in a couple of weeks to talk about that. American, post-bankruptcy, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth was a good market for them out of Syracuse. Unfortunately, when fuel prices skyrocketed, it was a little bit of a long haul, and they pulled that service, but we're talking to them again about Dallas-Fort Worth and, again, the seasonal service. And then United and Continental, more capacity to Chicago and service to Denver. The low-cost carriers, the airlines that are on our wish list, of course, the big one, Southwest. BWI is a huge hub for Southwest. As I mentioned, Syracuse is the largest unserved market to BWI. We recognize it, the folks at BWI recognize it, and I think Southwest recognizes it. So in our conversations with them, the markets that we're talking about include Baltimore, Chicago, and the South Florida markets. Frontier, another low-cost carrier based out of Denver. We have talked to them about service to Denver, service to Milwaukee. Again, they like what they hear, but the airlines are very methodical in their decision-making. They're in the business of making money, and they don't make money. If you follow the airline industry, they never make money, and Mr. Fisher can talk to that. He said to me, you know, this is the only industry that doesn't make any money, and I think Southwest has been the only airline consistently to earn a profit over the years, but when they are looking at new markets, they have so many things that they have to consider. They have a limited number of aircraft, and they really have to prioritize which markets they're going to go into. But we've met with Frontier, we've met with Spirit, we'll be meeting with Allegiant, and these are the markets that we are pushing for because it's a good mix of business and leisure markets that this region is looking for. So this is a little bit different than the earlier map. It's the current service and then the wish list. As I mentioned earlier, it would be nice to have service to Denver, and we continue to push it. I think it's also important to have increased capacity to these markets, which will make it easier to get to some of these markets further west. But certainly Minneapolis-St. Paul is a priority for us. Baltimore, and then the South Florida markets. Oh, okay. And I guess I will now turn it over to Mr. Bill Fisher. Most of you know him. Thank you. He says his day job is deputy county executive. His new day job is chair of the Syracuse Regional Airport Authority. He has two full-time jobs, and I know he does many other things that is being part of the community, but Mr. Fisher is going to talk a little bit about the Syracuse Regional Airport Authority, and I will turn this over to you.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Chris. And I'd like to say first just how fortunate the airport is to have a leader that is young and dynamic and female, which is a real trend in this town, as you've noticed. How do I get to the next slide? There we go. So let me talk about the Syracuse Regional Airport Authority, and two of my colleagues, I think, are here. Patrick Manning, who's the vice chair, is along the wall in the back, and Irene Scruton was here earlier. Irene, are you right in front here? So there are 11 of us, and we were all appointed to this board. It's a volunteer board. It's a New York State public authority, which comes with all kinds of bureaucracy and craziness because some of the authorities of the past got into a lot of trouble. And it's an authority that came into existence in the last couple of years thanks to the leadership of Mayor Driscoll and now Mayor Minor, when Matt Driscoll was the mayor. You'll recall they passed legislation that brought this authority into existence and made sure that the pilots that were in existence with the two school districts and the three towns would go forward, which they are, and set up a mechanism for the appointment of the board. And then the current mayor, Stephanie Miner, made this happen again, because I think a home rule resolution had to be passed again, and then it went to the state legislature where they passed legislation, and then it came back, and we got formed in July of last summer. So you've been hearing about it for years, and if you're wondering why we haven't really done much yet, it's because the bureaucracy grinds along very slowly, as it does in a lot of governmental ways. But we have been busy since last August really trying to think about how do we give the management of the airport tools that might be different than the city of Syracuse can provide. So the way this airport runs today is it sits on city property, even though it's out in the middle of towns and things. It's owned by the city, and it's always been managed by the city of Syracuse, and it's been sponsored by the city. So they are the people that are responsible for hiring the people within the aviation department that has always run this airport, and they're responsible for supplying the Syracuse police and the Syracuse fire and anyone else that needs to be out there at that airport. And those of us who work in municipal government know that that brings with it a very high burden, especially of late with the cost structures that you have with your municipal employees. When you're paying the kind of pensions that you are, you know, going forward, for example, Syracuse Police Department at the airport have a 25% pension cost. So if you're paying someone $40 or $50 an hour, which we are, there's another 25% right on top of that for pensions. So those costs impose upon the airport a competitive disadvantage that makes it very difficult for Chris and her team to go out and be successful in attracting the kind of air service that she's describing to you. So when she goes and talks to Southwest or JetBlue and says, please come here or please expand your presence here, one of the first questions they'll ask is, how much will it cost us? And how much will it cost us per passenger? And when we look at Rochester or Albany, which Chris mentioned as, you know, key competitors, they'll tell her we spend $6 or $7 for each passenger that gets onto a plane. And here in Syracuse, we spend $12. And in an industry, and $5 doesn't seem like much, except it's a high-volume industry. You're talking about the difference between $2 or $2.3 million in that range for security at one of those airports to $4 million at our airport. And that difference is very significant when someone like Southwest is coming in here and trying to generate profits at a high volume, low profit margin type business model. So we've got to get that cost down. That's what we've been focused on, and I'll describe that first. But there are other priorities that we're trying to do in response to what Chris and her team are telling us are the highest priorities from them as a management team. So with respect to the cost of security, the main reason that it's as expensive as it is because the police there don't there are three police that are out there in a given month that work as a dedicated police officer at the airport, and they work straight time. The other 130 that are out there in a given month work overtime, so that's time and a half. On average, we're paying in the $60 to $65 per hour range for the police that are there. So we're spending $3.4 million on overtime and only $600,000 of straight time. So we have successfully negotiated with the city an agreement that allows the authority to take over the security personnel services function at the airport. And we are busily interviewing candidates. Luckily, we don't have to be a pioneer here. There are private security companies that provide law enforcement and other type of guard services at commercial airports in the United States. So we found a number of them that were interested in doing business with us. And we've been interviewing them, we've narrowed it down, and within the next couple of weeks, I think we're going to narrow it down to one and hopefully come back to the full authority board in March with a recommendation, and then from there go on to the Common Council and say, we can save you a lot of money. You've already budgeted in your budget a certain amount for security, and we can save you a significant amount of money going forward. And if the Common Council agrees that that's the right way to go, we should have a much better story when we're talking to these airlines about what we're doing to reduce those costs. And that's the biggest cost, but we're going to be relentlessly focused on what are the other costs that we can look at as an authority that the city maybe didn't have control over and generate a lower cost of doing business for the airlines and improve the value proposition that Chris takes with her along with Center State when you're out there pitching Syracuse to new carriers or for expanded service. Let's see here. So in addition to other shows, the 11 of us and who appointed us, the mayor appointed seven and the county executive appointed me, and the towns and school districts also get some appointments here. There's also a regional advisory board. One of the things that is unique here, or maybe not unique, but different for us, is that it's a regional airport. Rather than just being the city of Syracuse's airport, it's designed to be the Syracuse regional. So both of those words we give kind of equal weight to, airport authority. So there are neighboring counties, and as Chris described, those are within our catchment area, but they haven't always looked at our airport as the primary focus. So one of our board members is John Johnson, Jr., who's the publisher of the Watertown Daily Times, and he will tell you the service at Fort Drum is abysmal, that what you have there are service members whose families cannot afford to visit them because it's too expensive, because the price of where they're flying from to here, because we aren't competitive and we aren't attracting the low-cost carriers, is so expensive that oftentimes they don't come to visit their sons and daughters before they're shipped off. So he's from Watertown, and they've got their own airport, but he happens to believe that what we need to do is scale up the airport we've got rather than taking little regional airports and taking federal subsidies and other things that might dilute our investment in this airport. So there's a regional advisory board that has, or potentially could have, we're still trying to get some of the counties to actually make the appointments, but we're trying to send the message that the entire region is what we're trying to serve. And when we're talking about doing business, for example, rather than just publishing in the Syracuse newspaper and saying the contractors that do business here, we want to come from Onondaga County, we're saying we want them to come from all the counties around here. We want the whole gamut of business people that might do business with us to see us as an opportunity to be part of something that has a more regional focus and a more successful outcome than we've had in the past. So we met first September 9, 2011, and because the state deems it so, we have a governance committee, which Irene chairs, and they've been off doing everything the right way so the public will trust that we have the integrity and the processes and all the things that we need to make sure that you know that when we're eventually operating this airport, and that will probably happen in the next 12 to 15 months, and it's a pretty significant business. You can't jump right into something that's a $29 million business that you don't know anything about and say, we're going to go run the place. But we, through the governance committee, have been doing it the right way as far as setting things up. The Public Authorities Accountability Act, PAAA, there's like two huge documents, and it's we have a lawyer that spends a lot of time just figuring out how that all works. We have a website. We have a mission statement. It's probably too long. I think the key is safe, secure, and low-cost air transportation service. So safety, obviously, is job number one, and we're not going to make any changes to the security out there that compromise the safety of the flying public. We also want low-cost air transportation. A laugh came up in the crowd when Chris mentioned that we have competitive prices. In some areas we do, and some we don't. And one of the things that we need to do is get a low-cost carrier like Southwest in here, because what you'll find when you actually study the industry is if an airline has competition, they will have significantly lower prices than if they're the only game in town. So Delta is the only way to get directly to Atlanta, so you pay $600 or $700 to fly direct to Atlanta. In New York City, we've got competition, so the pricing's pretty good. In Boston, we only have US Air, so the price is $600 to fly to Boston, so a lot of us drive. But if we could get JetBlue there, that presence of one competitor would probably drop that cost significantly. So that's really core to our mission. During the transition, what is happening now, the city of Syracuse still owns the airport. They have a common council that will adopt a budget soon for the 2012-13 fiscal year. So our fiscal year goes from July 1st to June 30th. So they'll adopt their budget. We're hoping that that's the last budget the common council ever has to adopt for the airport. And by the time that that fiscal year ends, we're running things. And when we finalize when we publish the financial statements for that year, they will be our financial statements rather than the city's. And this is a model that's been done in a lot of different airports, Albany, Rochester, a lot of upstate airports already have an authority, so the path is pretty well established. We're going to have to negotiate an agreement with the city that allows us to lease the airport from them. and it will say, we're going to pay off all the debt. You know, as money comes in from the passenger facility charges and from landing rights and gate fees and everything that is the revenue stream side of the business, we will pay the obligations of the city to the bondholders on the debt that you already have, but then new debt will come from us. And the operations, the revenue that comes in, rather than flowing through what's known as an enterprise fund, the aviation enterprise fund in the city, it'll flow through the same fund, but we will be responsible for that fund. So it will be hopefully pretty seamless, and hopefully in 2 or 3 or 4 months, the Common Council will agree to actually do this, and they won't be fighting with the mayor about something that blocks it. Sorry if that's a shot at the Common Council. I usually take shots at the county legislature. I couldn't resist. So we think by the May, June, July time frame, we should have this in front of the Common Council, and hopefully early in the summer, they'll pass this, and then Chris and her team, rather than working for the city as their employees, will be working for the Airport Authority as our employees. And hopefully we will have some other tools, I guess we'll come back here, in addition to looking at the cost and being relentless about driving the costs down for our business partners at the airport, we're also going to be looking at some opportunities to generate revenue. So the airport, it turns out, has a lot of land. You know, 20, 30, 50 years ago when people set this up, not only is that airport footprint pretty big, and not only is there a third runway that could be used someday, either as a runway or something else, there's other property that the city owns nearby. Some of it used to be part of Hancock Field, some of it that has been developed. I see Assemblyman Serpy in the crowd, in the audience, and he was very instrumental in getting, I don't know, $6 or $7 million in grants that's been used to help develop that property. And there's significant property that hasn't been developed there. And right now we have, or the city has, CNS engineers out there inventorying the property. And we're going to take a look at, can you develop that property a little bit differently, a little bit more aggressively than maybe a city could do. And if you start generating some more revenue off of that, that will help your airport operations. If you're doing a little better at the top line, you can translate that into a more compelling value proposition for the airlines themselves. We're also looking at things like this airport terminal project as being a real opportunity to rebrand the airport for the community, and it really is going to be a great, you know, and certainly security and access control are parts of it, but it's going to be a new look and feel. We can really make this be something that is a qualitatively improved, you know, significantly improved experience for the flying public. So instead of going to the two gates, you'll just go in the middle, and there'll be one way to get in there, and hopefully we'll find some queuing systems that, you know, don't scare you to death at 5:30 in the morning when you're out there on the bridge and you're like, am I ever going to make my plane? And we think we will be successful in making that a better experience. We're going to be changing some of the advertising there, having some digital displays and some more modern ways of doing things that hopefully will also generate some revenue opportunities. But all of this is being done at the board level in response to what our management is asking us to do. So we won't be running the airport. Chris and her team will. But in speaking with business people and with other stakeholders within the community, we're trying to understand, you know, what is the community looking for? How can we best represent the different interests of the community on the authority? And then how can we best respond to the needs of management in going out and making this airport a regional airport and something that the flying public finds more convenient at a lower price and really becomes an even more significant driver of economic development here than it has been in the past. So with that, I guess we'll take questions.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Chris. My daughter lives in Seattle, so I'm going to make a push for Seattle. It's one of those West Coast cities that you're going after. I also want to say that in addition to Irene Scruton and Pat Mannion, who are past TMR members, Beth Ruggie, a current TMR member, is a member of the Airport Authority. And we had a question here.
Hi, Beth. Yeah, Beth is also on our board.
Actually, two questions. Bill, the first one's for you, the second one for whomever. So, Bill, think about this question, and then I'll ask the second question. What happens when the Syracuse police or other people sue you for replacing them? How much does that slow you down? So think about that before you answer it on radio. And secondly, I just had a chance to take a long trip through many airports, domestic and international. Good news, bad news. Frankfurt, shoot me now if I ever have to go through it again. Horrible sprawling, terrible signage, terrible customer service. Take a lesson there. Philadelphia, on the other hand, although Pat Mannion tells me it's the worst airport in the world because of service, Philadelphia has a tiny little example. A probably 400 or 500 square foot footprint display in one section of local art, stunning. It made me of local ceramic artists. It made me want to stay and walk through as other people were doing it. It made me want to come back as I did on my return flight to visit it. It made me want to go back to Philadelphia and see those artists. We could do that very inexpensively here, and I'm hoping you're thinking of that kind of thing.
Thinking. So with respect to the Syracuse Police Department, they have done a fantastic job out there. If you go out there and you meet with Captain Tim Gay or any of the people that are out there, they're doing a wonderful job, and they are absolutely well-qualified, superbly trained. The only issue is how much it costs. And when we find a different way to do this, hopefully the provider of security out there will look to the members of the Syracuse Police Department who may be available off-duty or maybe available after they retire to come work at the airport, because we think even at the rates that will be paid that they will be very competitive rates with other opportunities that trained police officers have. So hopefully that becomes something that in the long run becomes a continued benefit to the police officers as it has been in the past. And do you want to answer the question about that?
I do agree with you. I've been through many airports and have seen these exhibits, and I think they're wonderful, a wonderful way to showcase local artists. And with our new terminal, our new lobby, there will be a lot of space that we can use creatively. That's one way to develop some of the space. So as we're thinking about what kind of features we want to include, that's something that we are considering. So I think it's important as well.
Has the Historical Association also been involved in any discussions about exhibits?
We've talked to them. We've actually loaned them some pieces in the past, and that's one group that we'll reach out to as well as we're thinking about how to develop an art space.
Great, thank you. You seem to be proposing the idea that the airport could be an economic engine for betterment of the community. I was wondering if you ever thought about having the economic development offices located there.
What do you think, Rob? Certainly it's a public space, and if there are opportunities, and what you're going to see is people coming into the middle of the airport a lot more, and that space could be a cavern that's sort of alienating when you walk through, or it could be something that has life and interaction. Certainly the Convention and Visitors Bureau is very interested in the opportunity to take the flying public and orient them to our community when they're arriving here, and we would love to see, and we've already had conversations about collaboration with the CVB and other economic development organizations about that.
I had the thought that you have to think about the overall travel experience. I listened to Chris last week keep telling us the garage is full, and you didn't mention anything about expanding the garage. I come in, I fly in, it costs me more to travel to Armory Square in a cab than it does to go from LaGuardia to Midtown Manhattan. I was wondering how often we bid out the cab contractor. Why is that so expensive?
Great question. We recently awarded the taxi service contract to Syracuse Regional Airport Taxi last year. The company that had been there prior to did a very good job. They'd been there several years. Their equipment was outdated, and they weren't offering the types of services that we thought the public wanted, the ability to make your reservation online, to have a website, you could set up an account if you're a frequent traveler. So we awarded a new contract to that firm.
They did maintain the current rate schedule, but they also brought in a brand new fleet of vehicles. So, you know, I think you have to kind of weigh what's important. And again, we do a lot of benchmarking. We look at what other airports are doing. We don't, when we look at our parking rates and we look at cab fares, we benchmark other airports. And I urge you to take a look at Rochester and see what their daily parking rates are. Ours are still the lowest in upstate New York. I think the same thing applies with a lot of the services that we provide. You know, it's an airport, so things are going to be a little more expensive, but we are conscientious of the fact that we want to have rates that are reasonable, but we also want to have really good service.
Good morning. Bill, how are you? I don't have to stand. They can see me. Question about living wage. I know that that was discussed and that was there was a promise given that that would be carried forward when the authority took over. Is that still on the table?
The only thing that we're doing right now is the security personnel services, and the agreement we reached with the city promised that we would honor all the existing ordinances, including the living wage that apply to us. In this case, we're going to be paying significantly more, or the vendor we choose. All the responses have come back with wages that are higher than the living wage. So at least on the first one, you can be sure that the pay that's going to be out there will be higher than that. We don't know enough about the other businesses that we might be operating when you're talking about some of the vendors that are out there that are providing cab service or baggage handling or the ATM service, people that are servicing that. The food and concession. I think we're going to have to look at a community at whether you're going to impose something on vendors that makes it impossible for them to do business with you. The last time, as I understand it, the food and beverage concession went out for competition, there was no competition. And we ended up with service that is not what we would like to see. If you ask the flying public, are they satisfied with the food and beverage service in the airport, they'll tell you no. Do you get more, if you get the competition, are you going to get better service, and is that worth the trade-off between imposing living wage on that vendor or not? I think, you know, the community is going to have to weigh in on that. I think the authority is more focused on making this the best possible experience for the flying public than on getting too deep into the political.
Could you just remind us what the living wage hourly rate is right now? Anybody know? 14?
There are two rates depending on.
I think it's in the realm because I know I had lost track of it myself, but we can check that out, and I know it's on the website. So.
Sarah. Yeah, Chris, I was somewhat curious. You talked about getting together all these groups of people to decide on what security would work best for the airport. And I didn't hear passengers as one of the groups that you talked to, and I was just kind of curious how passengers fit into the thinking of making design changes.
Well, our priority is obviously a security protocol that TSA will approve. They have the ultimate say over baggage and passenger screening at the airport. So any concept that we were thinking about, we needed to get their sign off. I think, you know, TSA has a lot of challenges, and each airport I know is different. We work very closely with our TSA officials to ensure that they're providing good customer service while at the same time doing their jobs, which is screening passengers and bags. I always, you know, I do appreciate any feedback, and I do hear a lot of feedback, good and bad, from folks on security. I think, for the most part, our TSA personnel does a very good job. They have a lot of challenges. You know, they're dealing with a lot of their own bureaucracy, but for the most part, I think that, you know, they do a good job, and I always welcome feedback from folks, but it was important to us. We had to have TSA sign off on any change to security protocol.
Can I add to that? Mm-hmm. So if I could add one thing to that, with the new terminal project comes an opportunity, and we've had conversations with the aviation department and CNS engineers, which has a lot of expertise in this area, and there have been a lot of surveys done of the flying public and what they're looking for in terms of security and the experience of going through the queues and the signage and the wayfaring. And there's actually some really solid research out there that the Transportation Research Board has, and our board's reviewing it and asking CNS to look at this to make sure that when we do come online with the reconfiguration that, and there really is a lot of data on this. If you're interested in it, you can go Google it, but it'll get down to the level of, you know, what should the experience be when you're checking into the kiosk? And if you've got kiosks that are independent of any one airline and you're coming through the bridges, because the way the new terminal will work is if you're parking in the garage, you'll come across the bridge and then you'll move to the middle, and that's where the security will be. Well, as you're moving towards the middle, if we've got kiosks that are universal, so you don't have to find the JetBlue or the US Air, now you can park on either side of the garage. And if it's a little bit less congested on the north side, then you park there, knowing that you'll be able to scan your credit card or whatever means you need to check in. So there's a lot of things like that that CNS is looking at, and that we will be trying to make sure we get right when we go live with the new terminal. And I think as an authority, you'll have one place to look when you're trying to complain, you're trying to make suggestions, rather than trying to figure out who in the city you talk to. There's just going to be one airport authority, and there'll just be one management team, and everybody at the airport will be working for the city, but, you know, for the airport, and hopefully they'll be dedicated to that, so the culture that happens there will be, or that you'll experience there will be more like a business and less like a municipality, if I can dare say that.
Okay. Time for one quick question.
This is for Bill. You talked about possible development of additional lands at the airport as a way to increase overall revenue and then bring down the cost of doing business at the airport. Can you expand on that a little bit more? What do you have in mind? Is it retail?
Yeah, one of the real trends in the industry is for the land around an airport to be developed. And in the past, it was... you know, especially if a city owns it, it becomes sort of a political thing. You move your business there. We want to be more strategic about that, and this community has a pretty good track record with the Hancock Field Development Corporation, the MDA, and other entities in town sort of said, what are we going to do with this land that's here, and how are we going to develop it, and what types of businesses could really be grouped here? We're not done either with Hancock Field or with the land north of it, or some land on South Bay Road, or along Eileen Collins Boulevard. There's different little pieces of land that we could develop. A good example of a success is Mohawk Logistics. Did they just open? Their facility just relocated to there. So that's something that has a clear synergy between an airport business and themselves. So we wouldn't want to just see any old thing be at the airport, you know, near an airport. You would want to have something that has some kind of symbiotic relationship and perhaps has some way to attract suppliers or members of their supply chain there, so that the real benefits from being close to an airport attract more and more businesses that maybe wouldn't be in our region to begin with. So rather than just trying to get someone to relocate somewhere already in our region to this, you know, airport, try to bring in some businesses that aren't in our region at all, and because there's some, as I said, symbiotic relationship between what you can do at an airport and what you can do with the partners. You know, you've got CNS engineers as you drive along. What about people that want to collaborate with CNS? And as CNS goes and exports their expertise around the country internationally, get some of their suppliers or codependent companies to be right there along with them.
Thank you. Christina, can you remind us what's the estimated completion date on the airport improvement project?
Late 2013.
Okay, great. And if you agree, and you can think about it for a minute if you need to, I can put the PowerPoint up on the website that will be along with the audio that WCNY will run. So I want to thank you again very much, Christina Reale and Bill Fisher.